right, good morning and welcome to this special report. I'm Brendan Palou. Back with us today is Premier John Horgan. John, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
Perfect. John, phase two of BC's restart plan kicks off today with many types of businesses eligible to reopen at half capacity. Even though we're not out of the woods yet, John, how exciting is it to be taking this step?
Well, I'm very pleased for British Columbians that after a lot of hard work by all of us, we've been able to bend the curve. We've seen a significant decline in new cases over a number of weeks. Dr. Henry's given us the green light to proceed cautiously to the next phase. And the stage that we're going into, of course, we're a bit ahead of other provinces across the country because we deliberately chose not to completely lock down our economy. Instead, Dr. Henry worked with public health officials and WorkSafe BC to try and find ways to stay open safely for workers, for customers. And by and large, we've been pretty successful in that regard. And I think that puts us in a pretty good place as we go into this week. And there'll be bumps along the way, to be sure. Some businesses will be frustrated. Some customers will be frustrated. But on balance, I think there's a sense of optimism that, thank goodness, we're slowly coming out from underneath the most bizarre time of our lives.
Now, last week, the province announced that students can head back to school in a limited capacity starting June 1st. I think one question that's on everybody's minds is, why do this now and not start fresh in September?
Well, there's a couple of reasons, Brendan. Firstly, for many young people, now some of the old-timies listening today might not have the same fond memories of school, but by and large, young people very much enjoy going to school. It's a joyous place to be. They see their friends, they learn new things, they love their teachers in the early years, to be sure. And so to be pulled out of school and without any explanations, and that's up to families to just, you know, to determine how much information you give young ones about why their lives have been disrupted. But we felt, and we talked to stakeholders across the province, parents, trustees, superintendents, teachers, support staff, almost everyone felt it would be important to get the kids back into school, the young ones particularly, K to five, just so that they remember school as being a positive place, not a place to be feared. And we do that on a gradual volunteer basis so that we know better what things will look like come September, because it will look different in September. We need to reconfigure classrooms differently. We need to decide how much virtual learning we're going to keep going. That's for some kids, it's been a great way forward because they can plow ahead with their laptops or their iPads. For other kids, it's been less successful. So this is an opportunity to do a dry run for September, and I think it was the right choice. We'll see. Parents will make the choices about what they do with their kids, whether they send them back to class on a part-time basis for the month of June or whether they keep them at home until September.
Now, over the weekend, you issued a statement expressing your disappointment about some racist activity that is taking place in our province during COVID-19. Do you feel that these actions are a step in the wrong direction when the message has been all along to be kind to one another during this time?
It's completely inconsistent with, I think, who we are as British Columbians. We are a diverse population. I'm the son of an Irish immigrant beyond our Indigenous peoples who have been here forever. We all come from somewhere else. And I just don't believe hate or racism has a place in BC. And it's very few examples, but it's examples that I believe we all need to stand up to. This most recent event over the weekend was the culmination of many type of similar attacks, people seeing it on their television screens, people of Asian descent being pushed to the ground randomly. One video image, very graphically, someone walked past someone and deliberately turned around to push them to the ground. That's thuggery. It's ridiculous and it's not acceptable in BC. I felt it was important for me to speak up. And I know that I'm working with other members of the legislature, the leaders of the BC Liberals and the Green Party, as well as the Lieutenant Governor, to have a unified nonpartisan statement around this and a campaign to make sure that we, when we see racism, when we see hate, we stand up together against it, just as we've done with COVID-19. Our success has been a collective success, all of us working on this together.
Now, BC Parks opened facilities for day use over the weekend, with most campgrounds expected to reopen June 1st. How important was it for the province to be in tandem with Ottawa's announcement last week on Parks Canada and historic sites just in time for summer to bring some form of normalcy back?
Yeah, well, we've been working very cooperatively with the federal government. And in fact, provinces, governments right across the country, as well as regional districts and municipalities. These are unprecedented times. We all know that. We've heard it so many times. But I think there's not too many people in BC right now that don't get that this is something that none of us could have expected. And what people have expected, though, is that we work on this together. And that's been the approach we've taken here in BC, right across the province. People who have disagreed on things their entire lives are finding ways to find common ground. And that's been the sentiment I've been getting from the federal government as well. I talk regularly with the Prime Minister and the Deputy Prime Minister, as well as premiers across the country. And the focus has been, how do we find a way to give confidence to the public that we are putting them first and foremost? It's all about people at the end of the day. Our economy is people. Without people, we have no economy. So we need to make sure that businesses, workers, are comfortable. We need to make sure that the spectacular beauty of British Columbia and Canada is there for us to enjoy this summer, and tourist operators are going to need us traveling internally, but not right now. Dr. Henry was pretty clear, there's future long weekends come July. I'm hopeful we'll continue to have positive results on the public health side, and that we can indeed travel across the province to all the great locations and support small businesses and tourist operators in every corner of the province.
Now, the Council of Forest Industries is calling on the province to make the sector more cost effective during COVID-19. What steps are being taken, and how important will it be to get this sector in better shape post-pandemic?
Well, it's just another body blow for the forest industry. We've had successive challenges, whether it was the advent of the pine beetle come 15, 20 years ago now, or in more recent times, successive fire seasons that have really taxed us in terms of our ability to respond and the impact on the environment. And then on top of that, we've still embroiled in a softwood lumber dispute with our largest trading partner, the United States, as well as seeing lumber prices drop like a stone. So there's been a succession of impacts, and put the COVID-19 on top of all of that, there are significant challenges in our forest economy. So we've taken steps to address stumpage deferrals. We've worked with COFI on that. We've got a bit of way to go in terms of how we open up new markets for our products. We continue to do a lot of marketing overseas outside of the U.S., but there are challenges, to be sure, and I think the industry has recognized that. And over the past 10 years, as we went through the pine beetle wood, and now we're looking at how do we get more value and less volume out of our forests. And that's my focus, and that's COPI's focus as well.
Now, without getting ahead of ourselves, Phase 3 is slated to run June to September. How crucial are these next 2 to 4 weeks, and how confident are you that we can get there?
Well, I believe Dr. Henry's leadership has been absolutely critical to our success. The public has responded to her competence, her kindness, and her focus on making sure we do what's right. Add to that the extraordinary work of the BC Public Service, who have been working 7 days a week, similarly with the public service in Ottawa, I have to say, 7 days a week to try and find ways to make sure that we keep people safe. And now as we go into the summer and stage two of our restart of the economy, we need to make sure that everyone's on the same page. And that's why we're working with WorkSafe, who understands their core business is to make sure workers are safe, but whether it be in an industrial site, a retail site, a hospitality site, working with health officials to make sure that workers can be comfortable, and therefore customers, because the restart will not work if people are not confident that the businesses that they frequent are taking the right steps to protect their workers and their customers. And that means, again, there's going to be fits and starts. There will be some stumbles. Today is day one. I can anticipate a lot of stories about the challenges. But this was never expected to be the flick of a switch. It was going to be a slow, deliberate approach. And that's what we expect to see throughout the next days and weeks and, in fact, months.
Now, Bonnie Henry stated that the province's new normal could last over a year. And if that's the case, how does that potentially impact the 2021 election? And is there any recourse to push it back if the province is still dealing with the pandemic? Or could we just jump from one major issue to the other?
Well, in the 3 years I've been premier, Brendan, I've been jumping from one issue to the other, so it just seems to be normal for me. You know, we are a minority government, after all. You'll recall back to coming on 3 years ago, the expectation was the government would be around for a year or so, and then there would be an election. I'm not thinking about that at all right now. What I'm focused on is making sure that we're putting in place programs to protect people. I'm working as hard as I can to reach across the party divides in BC, which I've long established. And I have to tell you that the response has been pretty favorable. Most people, regardless of how they vote, they want to see people working together. And we've been able to demonstrate that, all the parties in the legislature, that we're focused on what we should be, and that's the people of BC.
What would you say to people who think the government is maybe doing too much or maybe too little for families or people already on provincial assistance, and maybe not enough for some hardworking British Columbians, maybe not getting the same level of government benefits during this time?
It's always a challenge to get that right balance about giving a hand up to help people get through difficult times. And you know, there's no shortage of great success stories of people who have taken a little bit of help and worked that into a very successful business or successful career. You know, I think of no shortage of people who have been successful after coming out of hard times, whether it's a bankruptcy, a personal challenge, and so on. So as government, you want to make sure that you're filling those gaps as best you can. We've left it to the federal government, which has the governance over the Employment Insurance Fund, for example, and money that's paid in by workers, to make sure that they distribute that back to people in a fair way. It's called the CERB, and it's been working fairly successfully. But we wanted to supplement that, so we put in a $1,000 benefit for workers in BC that they could apply for if they were eligible for CERB. We also put in place a program for renters that put money directly in the hands of landlords so that renters could feel that they were meeting their obligations, even though they may be out of work. And landlords would feel a sense of, well, you haven't forgotten us as well. You're at least getting some of this money flowing to us rather than directly to tenants. And there was a lot of debate about that, but I thought it was the right way to go. We were protecting the people who we didn't want to see out on the streets, and we put in place a moratorium on evictions. But we also wanted to make sure that the landlords, who are the ones that are putting their capital at risk, buying a home or creating a space for someone to rent, that they also had protections. But it's always difficult to make sure you get the right balance. Some will be critical we did too much. Others will be critical we didn't do enough. And I'm just going to keep focused on what I hear and make sure that our government's there for people when they need us.
Now, the BC government has filed a class action lawsuit against several companies in connection to the opioid crisis. Cities like Prince George and Quesnel is looking to get remuneration if there is a settlement or court victory, while other provinces have joined. As Premier, what is your view on this?
Well, it was, I think, a bold move. We've seen it with tobacco as well. Governments of BC are early on, going back over 20, 25 years, I think, sued or took to court tobacco companies to get compensation for the impact on our healthcare system. And since then, no shortage of other jurisdictions have joined in that type of a suit. And I believe that the opioid approach is similar to that. I have a great deal of confidence in my Attorney General, David Eby. He is directing the legal action through his ministry. And I believe it's the right way to go. We have two health crises right now. People forget that the opioid crisis is far from being resolved. And in the middle of all of that, we've had to focus on COVID-19, which has had a broader impact, of course. But people need to understand, and I know that many do, that an addiction to opioids is not a direct result of wanting to be a user. Many opioid addictions result from injuries at the workplace or any number of other health requirements that have you prescribed an opioid. And then when your prescription runs out, that's when things run afoul. So this is an insidious addiction, and I believe the government's doing the right thing to protect the broader community by holding the people who create this product accountable for it.
Last week, you proposed to NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman that there are more than enough rinks to hold regular season and playoff games with no crowds. Why do you think this proposal could work, and what, in your mind, makes our province a more desirable location than others?
Well, we were approached by the Vancouver Canucks initially. to participate in what was called a hub city approach, where Vancouver would be the hub city for Pacific Division games. And that's certainly something we support. And then since then, others have come forward through the Players Association and agents and others with this notion of having BC as a hub because of the outstanding rinks we have for Western Hockey League teams like in Prince George and Kelowna and Kamloops, Victoria, and a former American Hockey League rink in Abbotsford. Again, appropriately sized, appropriately outfitted, could certainly host NHL games. So being a hub for the entire league has kind of flown out of this, or flowed from this initial proposal to be a hub city in Vancouver, with the Canucks driving that for the Pacific Division. When I talked to Mr. Bettman and Mr. Daly, his assistant, what they were most excited about, of course, was getting the season back and running, but they did not want that to happen at the expense of the players' health or the communities where they operate, whether it be in Vancouver or with the broader proposal to be in Western Hockey League cities. So they were excited about our capacity to do that. Also, if you're thinking of spending the summer somewhere with your family, British Columbia is pretty much the top of the list for most Canadian hockey players and Europeans as well. So it's a good place to be. We've had a good, good result from our efforts to bend the curve on COVID-19. So the health of British Columbia is better than other provinces, certainly, and many, many host states in the U.S. So there's a lot to commend British Columbia to this initiative. I felt, quite frankly, Brendan, that as a hockey fan, what we need is a little bit of hope. We've heard no shortage of the grim reality of the pandemic, the challenges of economic uncertainty. So why not instill a little bit of hope? And I think even if you're not a hockey fan, the idea of being able to watch hockey is something that someone you know, someone you love, someone you care about would be pretty excited about. So it was an initiative that it took me about 2 seconds to get behind. The good news, of course, is I talked to Dr. Henry about it, also a hockey fan, and also a problem solver, someone who looks at the challenges in front of her and finds, how do I find a way through this that benefits the greatest number of people? That's been her approach. That's why we didn't have to shut down completely our construction sector, for example, because she found workarounds to keep the industry going. And she was pretty excited. She hasn't seen a plan yet, so she's not giving it a thumbs up until she sees what the NHL is going to propose in some detail. But the principals put a big smile on her face, and anytime Bonnie's smiling, I'm happy.
Last question I have for you today. Has this been more or less stressful than leading the NDP in a provincial election?
I don't know. I can't measure those things anymore. I get up every day and do the best I can. That's how I was raised. That's what I've taken to this job. I felt from the beginning as the leader of a minority government that I would just give it everything I had every day, and the public will make their call. In terms of stress, it's hard to say. I don't usually respond to stress. It just I have an internal way of managing that. But that's easy to say, but my spouse would tell me certainly I've got less hair and it's as gray as it can possibly be. And I'm not sleeping overly well, but that's fine. I'm doing the best I can, and I wouldn't trade what I'm doing for anything in the world.
Well, John, it's been a pleasure speaking with you again on this crisis. And from all of us here at Vista Radio, I would like to extend my thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to speak with us once again.
Not at all, Brendan. Thanks very much for the opportunity. We'll see you soon.
All right. Thanks, John.
Bye now.
That was BC Premier John Horgan speaking with us today as the province kicks off phase 2 of its 4-phase recovery process. And until next time, I'm Brendan Pollock.